This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, a special edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, the Economic Forecast, sponsored by Plante Moran. A special roundtable discussion live from Plante Moran's downtown Chicago office. Here's WBBM Cisco Cotto.
WBBM News Time 12:03. It is great to have you with us for this special Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. It's always wonderful to be here at the downtown offices of Plante Moran. Really beautiful place. Lots of activity right here along the river. Really appreciate them being such great hosts. On today's Noon Business Hour, special economic roundtable, as we talk about 2019 and what can be expected in the new year of 2020. We're joined by three great guests, people that are regularly on the Noon Business Hour. Susan Schmidt is with us, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors here in Chicago. Andrew Bush, former chief markets intelligence officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, also a political economist, and Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital here in Chicago, author of the book Calculated Risk. Let's begin with you, Andy Bush. Fascinating this morning that President Trump is tweeting about tariffs and how he may put more tariffs on China if there's no trade deal. As a political economist and looking at it from that angle, what do you make of what you're seeing? And as we look to the new year, how do we even move forward in this environment?
Right. Well, it's the president ramping up, obviously, pressure on the Chinese. We've seen in the press from China, and it's been leaked out to a number of different sources, that they're pushing back, that there is actually an agreement, that they have an agreement because the Chinese are very concerned about the amount of tariffs that are already on Chinese goods coming into this country. And the president is not backing off, saying we're going to reduce those if we get a phase one agreement. So I think from that standpoint, the Chinese are negotiating in the press just as the president is. So the Chinese are saying, no, there's no agreement. And the president is saying, look, if we don't have an agreement, there's more tariffs coming your way. So from that standpoint, it's going to be along those lines. It's going to be very difficult. Going forward, this is not going to change. We may get a phase one agreement, and that would be great for the farmers in the Midwest, maybe $50 billion a year of agricultural products. Fantastic. But going forward, whether it's this president or whether it's a Democrat who takes over in 2020, trade will remain a very difficult issue for any of these presidents and also for the economy.
Now, Susan Schmidt, this was fascinating to me, okay? Because the president tweets this morning this warning to China about more tariffs, and immediately I went to the ticker and I started watching to see what happened to Wall Street, because I'm like, oh, watch the markets tank. You know, nothing happened. Nothing happened at all. So are we beyond the point where those tweets really do anything to the markets?
I think we are. We're seeing some impact on the margin, but only when it's really striking. The market's gotten so used to this as a background noise that they're starting to forget about it. They expect this back and forth to continue. I think there's overall optimism that some sort of trade deal will be reached, but the market's holding on to that, and that's why it's at these high levels. But I do think they know a lot of noise has gone by and is still going to come. So they're ignoring it for the most part.
Of course, at some point, there's going to be a tweet that matters. Right, Mike? I mean, there'll be a tweet that really does do something and should move the markets. But maybe they've cried wolf enough where it just doesn't matter.
I just think this tweet in particular has no real bearing on the markets. And it was somewhat expected. So you're not going to get a big move on this. But that does not mean we're over the Trump tweet syndrome that we've had for the last 3 years. If he comes out and says, we have a deal, it's over, markets will rally significantly. So this one just happens to be a nothing burger, to be honest with you. And we move on.
Well, how do you move forward in an environment like this, especially as we look forward to 2020? More with our roundtable here at the downtown offices of Plante Moran.
We're taking your questions on today's special edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Tweet your comments at WBBM News Radio or write them on the WBBM News Radio Facebook page. Back to the downtown Chicago office of Plante Moran on News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being with us. I'm Cisco Cotto, along with Andrew Bush, Michael Palumbo, and Susan Schmidt, talking about this year and everything that we have seen this year. Later on in the show, we'll look forward to 2020. Andy, as a political economist, what have you been seeing in 2019? Is there anything that has surprised you? I mean, in general, what do you make of the way the year has gone so far?
Yeah, the biggest surprise was what happened at the very beginning of the year, which is when the Federal Reserve changed their monetary policy on January 4th. That has been the biggest driver of all economic activity in the sense of low interest rates. But as far as the markets go, it's incredibly positive. So the Fed's cut rates three times, and they're quantitative easing right now, meaning they're building the balance sheet back up. It's just, for investors, this is as good as it gets as far as the economy goes. As far as the equities go. Overall, I think there's a limit to this, and we'll probably find that out in 2020. But right now, from an equity standpoint, and I don't want to step on Susan's toes, but we did talk about this just like 15 minutes ago. And I think from that standpoint, it's really positive.
Well, Susan, do you agree? You as positive as Andy? Andy's always positive, right?
Really optimistic. But it is a great environment. So we've got low interest rates. We had some concern about the economy coming into the year. Businesses were pretty backed off. Business management teams are still nervous about what's going to happen with the trade deal. They don't understand what's going to result and how that's going to impact their costs. But overall, they're positive. They're feeling good because the Fed did reverse policy. That lower interest rate is a boon for them. They feel positive about that. Business is going well. And for the large part, we are almost through third quarter earnings. I think investors came in thinking they were going to be terrible. They were better than that. And investors now are feeling like, okay, the trough is past. We're going to get through this. And they're looking forward into 2020.
Yeah. Mike, how are you thinking about 2019, especially given all the uncertainty that we talk about regularly on the show?
Well, we basically had the sell-off in fourth quarter last year, and that put the scare in everybody. So everybody's earnings numbers are expectations were down. We beat those, but the bar was very low. So when we beat them, the market rallied in a relief rally, and we've had a heck of a year. It's up 25%. Where we go from here, we'll see, and we'll talk about that in another segment. But, you know, right now, I think that because of Fed policy being accommodative and because they had such easy numbers to beat, you have this rally. But now, from here, we'll see.
Now, earlier in the... Oh, go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, you know, don't confuse with the equity rally with economic activity, because this quarter is going to be very, very slow. It could be below 1%. And we're already seeing U.S. manufacturing pretty much in a recession already. Consumers are what's driving this. Obviously, 70% of the economy, low unemployment, pretty decent wage growth. That leads to a lot of forward momentum. So to the question that everybody asks about a recession, it's hard to see it, but we're in a slow growth period right now.
And
so,
GDP next year, probably 1%, 1.5%.
It could
so that's
well
pretty
be.
Close to recessionary.
Wait, we were optimistic. What happened here in a span of about 45
positive.
Seconds here?
Still positive.
Right. And no, I just think you got to keep this in mind. You know, we went from the new normal prior to 2016 into 3% GDP growth 2017, 2018, but that's fading. The fiscal spending is fading. So what do we look forward to as investors? Well, that's why there's so much focus on the tariff stuff, because that's really holding back businesses and capital expenditure. So we want that to ease. We want to get through that. But I would say it's hard to like put the band back together for supply chain lines. So it's going to have a longer term negative effect overall, but the U.S. economy is still the best dirty shirt in the laundry.
Yeah, so even if there's a deal today, Susan, I mean, as Andy's saying, there's that ramp up. It's not like businesses are going to just immediately start spending a bunch of money.
No, but there will be a sense of relief because we do have some clarity, finally. And this is not new for the Trump administration. We've had big periods where there's a complete lack of clarity. No one quite knows what's going to happen.
What?
Yeah, imagine. But businesses are used to that. They're just trying to get a handle on their costs. And I think what's important to note about the economy here is we did talk about how important the consumer is. And that's why earnings reports today were important coming out from Home Depot and Kohl's. The economy is driven by the consumer. And so things do look optimistic in the sense that generally things go well when you have such full unemployment and average hourly earnings are going up. And that's what we have.
Mike, at the beginning of the year, I can't remember if you said this or not, but we had people on the show urging defensiveness. You know, it's going to be rough. It's going to be uncertain. In hindsight, was that a good call for those people who were saying that to us?
Well, I was one of the ones saying that.
Well, then it was a great call, wasn't it?
Oh, of course it was. I said it. No, it was, and it ended up being a good call just because if you look at the sectors that have benefited so much this year, it's the defensive sectors, consumer staples, real estate, those are the ones that are going up. And that doesn't mean the tech hasn't had a good year too, but if you look at a lot of the industrials and industries like that, they have not done so well. So you're seeing a buildup or a buy-up of industries that are considered defensive. I don't think that continues in the next year, but it definitely has been the story of this year.
That is Michael Palumbo, along with Susan Schmidt and Andrew Bush, joining us on a very special economic roundtable. We're taking a look at 2019, and soon we'll be talking about 2020 and what we can expect. Broadcasting the noon business hour from the downtown offices of Plant Moran today. More just ahead.
From Plant Moran's downtown Chicago office, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Cisco Cotto joining you along with Andrew Bush, Michael Palumbo, and Susan Schmidt. We've talked about 2019. In just a few minutes, we will talk about 2020 and kind of looking forward to what we expect. I want to follow up on something that was discussed here earlier on the importance of the consumer and specifically looking at Home Depot and some of the other spaces that homeowners go. Susan, we have this housing start number. It rebounded. How important, for people who aren't aware of this, how important is it that people are buying houses, building houses, rehabbing houses? I mean, how important is all that to the economy?
Yeah. One word, very. We need to think about that because there's so much that goes into a house. Whether you're buying a new house, you're rebuilding, you're refurnishing, you're buying a new washing machine. Think of all the things that you stuff in that box where you sleep. And so there's a lot of things that drive consumer activity that are oriented around the house. When we look at housing starts, we're really trying to get a of engage how that consumer is feeling and how much activity there is. We've had strong household formation. One of the reasons that we're in the state we're in now is because we overbought and we had such a big housing boom going into 2008. We've reversed that. We're seeing that number and housing start slowly climb back up. I think we're near normalcy now, but that money multiplier effect around housing is critical to keeping the economy strong.
Andy, obviously the consumer is always a huge part of the economy. Is it a little scary though at this point, given the fact that businesses aren't spending as much? I mean, if the consumer gets scared a little bit, that could be a really bad thing for the economy.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see what stories will come up that maybe get them nervous about things. But right now, and I agree with Susan, I mean, 3.6% unemployment, average hourly earnings are good. It's just hard to see a dramatic slowdown unless those really tank. I mean, unless you see unemployment shoot up like 2%. That just doesn't seem like it's in the cards right now. Down the road, a little bit further into 2020, yes, we can start to see some of that. But right now, it should be a decent Christmas season. You know, if the president actually eases up on these tariffs at all, and don't put that aside, because there's a big chunk of Chinese goods that are consumer goods that he could say, again, just like he did last year, you know, we want our consumers to be able to buy these a little cheaper. I mean, if he does something like that, you'll see even a bigger thrust to spending.
Yeah, and Mike, as we think about the holiday season and whether it's retail stocks or anything that's really impacted by the holiday shopping season, tariffs obviously play a role. I mean, if things are more expensive, people aren't able to buy as many things.
Well, there's no doubt that the tariffs do play a big role. My comment is that retail's not dead, just bad retail is dead. And so you see that in the numbers today. Home Depot comes in, the stock's down, but their numbers were fine. They hit on the bottom line, the top line was a little bit short, but they're fine. They actually made their predictions for next year down slightly from what the market expected, but nothing big. This stock has run up like 30-something percent this year or more. It's a horse, and so you got good retail. Now you look at Kohl's. Kohl's is a dumpster fire, and you look at the numbers. The stock's down almost 20% today. That's a stock that is the other side of retail.
Well, you know what? Hold on that right there, because I want more on Home Depot and especially more on Kohl's. If you say dumpster fire, that means I want to give you more time to get into that.
The Economic Forecast, sponsored by Plant Moran. Back to our roundtable discussion live from the downtown Chicago office of Plant Moran as this special edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Good to have you with us. Mixed returns on Wall Street today. We'll continue our discussion on the markets with our panel of experts. Two bodies have been discovered in a car pulled from Lake Michigan. It was off Lakeshore Drive and Randolph Street. Two top White House national security aides are testifying today, saying they're concerned about President Trump's phone call with the leader of Ukraine. On Wall Street, Dow down 97. The NASDAQ is up 24, and the S&P is down 1 point. Again, clouds in Chicagoland. Those are going to linger throughout the day. We're at our high right now. It's 41 degrees in Chicagoland. Great to be back at the downtown offices of Plant Moran with this economic roundtable. Andrew Bush is joining us. Michael Palumbo and Susan Schmidt. I think I have to follow up on our discussion just before we broke there. A dumpster fire is how Michael Palumbo described Kohl's. I don't know, Mike. The stock is only down 18.5% today. I don't know. Maybe you're misreading this.
Well, 18.5% to me is a dumpster fire. I'm sorry.
What's going on with Kohl's?
The fact is they didn't just come out with poor earnings. Their expectations next year are for $4.85 a share. It was supposed to be $5.30. That's a big difference, 10% down, and that just shows the company slowing down. They are not in the right spot for retail. It's not a good spot to go to when you're looking at somewhere where I want to spend my money. It's Walmart. It's places like that. Kohl's is not one of them. In the last 5 years, it's been dead money. It's done nothing in 5 years in the stock market. I expect that to be continued into the future.
I've heard a lot of people say with Kohl's, they got themselves caught up in the coupon game where, you know, they mail out all these coupons, 20%, 30%, whatever. Susan, it's at a point I wonder if shoppers go, I'm not shopping there until I get one of those coupons and until I get one of the big coupons.
Well, we have conditioned the public for that. So yeah. Consumers know, and we're going to see a lot of that because, remember, we're coming up into the holidays. And when do consumers look for those coupons and the discounts the most? Right around the holiday time. So we're seeing that. We're going to see more of it. Consumers have gotten very smart in how they shop. And also consumer preferences are changing. That's important to think about because consumers aren't spending the same way. Millennials do not want to buy the same things their grandparents wanted. So they're shopping very differently. A lot of it is online. A lot of it is geared towards spending your money on an experience, not necessarily on stuff. And that changes the pattern. It's making it really tough for retailers to figure out how to position. And it's going to narrow the field. Not all of them can survive that.
Yeah. Well, and that's, Andy, talk about the experience economy. I mean, that's why we have the gigantenormous Starbucks in town now, right? I mean, it's not just about coffee.
No, definitely not. And what's interesting, I think, when you get into retail space is you start thinking about commercial real estate. And when you think about commercial real estate, that's one of the areas that benefits dramatically from lower interest rates. And so there's been tremendous investment in that space. But to me, that's where I think things are getting a little bit dicey. And if you looked at the Fed's recent financial stability report, they mentioned commercial real estate. They mentioned triple B minus high yield debt as an issue to really keep an eye on going forward as one of the key risks from today through 2020. And I think the reason for that is you really have to know the space. To Michael's point, you know, if it's not Kohl's, there's other people that really understand this. And to Susan's point, if you're in a mall, you really have to create that aura of an experiential feeling so that you get the right tenants in there, you draw people in that will spend money. And so when you're looking at commercial real estate, you really have to know which tranche, which bond you're buying and what that means for it. Is it in that space? Is it in the right space? Otherwise, you could get really caught on with a problem there.
And Mike, does this go to what you said earlier? It's not that all retail is bad. You know, there's bad retail and there's good retail. As an investor, do you have to be discerning who is seeing these trends, who is really performing well, who's really best positioned to take advantage of this, and who, maybe it's Kohl's, you know, who's just continuing to do things the old way?
Well, there's two ways to do retail. You could look at online, and then you look at the places like Amazon, obviously the king. But you also have Walmart, you have Best Buy. These are all stocks have done well. Home Depot, even though their earnings missed a little bit today, the stock is up gigantically this year, and it's near its all-time high. So you have retailers that know what they're doing. They make it an experiential situation for consumers. You have to get them to either come to your store and give them a reason to come or have an online presence that's so easy to use that they don't want to. One of those two. Kohl's hasn't figured either of those out yet. Maybe they will, but right now they haven't.
Now, Susan, as far as retail as a sector goes, can you even really talk about it as a sector, given what we're discussing here, that you have some people who are really nailing it and some people who really aren't?
Well, I think that's an important distinction, and that doesn't apply just to retail. Think about technology. That also applies to a lot of other sectors right now, because we've seen such diversification within businesses, what's working, that changing consumer once again, what people use these businesses for. And so I think retail has changed a lot. You've got the discounters, when you think Ross, TJ Maxx, Burlington, they're doing very well this year. The consumer wants to go for that shopping experience. At the same time, you see things like Simon Property Group, which is a high-end mall REIT, real estate investment trust. Their properties are doing very well because they are more top tier. It's the guys who are in the middle and aren't quite sure what, you know, they're not A class, they're not D class, they're in the murky middle, and they don't know what they are. They're having a hard time figuring out what is the draw for consumers to come to them.
It's sort of that old school industrial, this is what we've done, it's been very good for decades, we've made this work, and the world is just changing. I mean, it's sort
quickly.
Of evolve, yeah, evolve or die, especially when it comes to the retail space. I want to ask you, I'm not sure who wants to chime in about this, when it comes to the FANG stocks, you mentioned technology, Susan. Can we even still talk about FANG stocks, or have things changed so much in technology, these companies, they're just not sort of aligned like they used to be?
Well, we can talk about FANG stocks, but each one is unique in its own way. Each one is a disruptor in its own way, and there are plenty more. And don't forget that we've had some really interesting companies come to market that have failed miserably as public companies. So we've got Uber, Lyft, et cetera, that haven't done well as we think about taking that business model out in public. And so there is this, you know, sort of warped perception on what does work in technology and what doesn't. We're willing, as a private company, we're willing to give things a very long runway to become profitable. Once it turns public, that runway shortens in a lot, and we want to see that profitability.
Yeah, let's talk about those disruptors. We'll do that in just a moment.
We're taking your questions on today's special edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Tweet your comments at WBBM News Radio or write them on the WBBM News Radio Facebook page. Back to the downtown Chicago office of Plant Moran on News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
Cisco Cotto, so pleased to be joined by Susan Schmidt, Michael Palumbo, and Andrew Bush, this economic roundtable, talking about 2019 and what we can expect in 2020. Let's talk about disruptors, because we just touched on this moments ago. Mike, when it comes to an investor, as Susan mentioned, you can have a company like Uber that comes in, it completely disrupts so much, and yet it still can't turn a profit. What's an investor to do? Something that's a good investment may get completely flipped upside down by something that may not be a good investment.
Well, the thing is about disruptors is you also have to make money. So the big deal now is the last few years, some of the companies that have gone public have not been able to show a path to profitability. So you got Uber, they're bleeding money every quarter, and WeWorks, who's now scared to even go public because they may not never make any money. So the key is, if you want a high valuation, if you want a successful IPO, you not only have to show how many subscribers you have, how many users you have, like Facebook does, but how are you going to make money on those folks? And these companies that have been failures in IPOs have not been able to do so.
You know, you've got millions and millions and millions of dollars, billions we could say in some cases, invested in these companies that are successful in that they are able to attract users, Susan, but if they don't make money, as Mike is saying, at some point you got to be able to make money.
Well, you do. And I think that's a problem here, too, because what we see is investors are searching for a place to invest. The markets are at all-time highs because we don't have a lot of alternatives. So businesses are a great place to invest when interest rates are essentially zero. If you're in Europe, interest rates are negative. You're paying a bank to hold on to your money. So that's not a good scenario. People are looking for a return that pushes people into equities, and they're rushing into businesses that, as you said, may not make money longer term, but they're willing to take that chance. We've seen an excessive amount of this in, again, private equity and venture capital, where you're not on the public markets yet and people are rushing to find that next big thing, hoping for that big return.
In just a few minutes, we're going to get thoughts on 2020 from all three of you. But I want to shift gears here for a moment and talk about trade. Andy Bush, obviously, China's a big deal. That seems to be the focus. Are we going to get a deal? When are we going to get a deal? What's it going to look like? But that's not the only trade deal that's hanging out there.
No, the USMCA should get a vote by the end of the year. I I know there's meetings today between the head of the AFL-CIO and freshman Democrats, and that's really – the freshman Democrats are very worried about not being able to lead and not being able to get a trade deal because they're in districts where President Trump won handily. So going into 2020, they could potentially lose. So there's about 30 of these people that really want to get a USMCA deal. As soon as Nancy Pelosi allows it to be voted on, it will pass. And it will help the Midwest. It'll help agriculture because obviously between Canada and Mexico, U.S. exports a lot of ag. So from that standpoint, it'll be quite good. But it's nothing great overall in the sense of it's much better than NAFTA. It is not. There's some things in there that aren't really fun that companies are going to have to deal with. But it's a question of just settling things down and having a normal business environment where you can make a decision on capital expenditures that makes sense, that you can go to your board and say, yes, we want to build a plant in Canada or in Mexico or build one here in the United States. And that's really where the rubber meets the road with this trade deal.
The politics of it, though, is fascinating to me because you have, as you mentioned, people in those swing districts who just really want to get this done. You have people maybe in more liberal or solidly Democratic districts who don't want to give the president a victory on anything.
Right.
Electoral politics does play a role here, and business just wants something done.
Right, it does. And so the way I frame this is, like, Nancy Pelosi, the key for her is she wants to keep her job. So how does she keep her job? She's got to get a majority of her party to vote for her as speaker by the end of the year. And how does she do that? Well, she appeases the progressives by having the impeachment process begin and run through that. But then she also has to appease the moderates, which are these 20 to 30 Democrats in Trump districts that want the USMCA. That's why I think USMCA will be voted on by the end of the year and passed.
Mike, with those trade deals sort of hanging out there, is there investment that is held up? Again, we talk about China a lot. Is there investment in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada that gets held up because businesses just aren't exactly sure what the future is going to look like?
Well, anytime there's uncertainty, it's going to cause businesses to pull back. So, you know, with the USMCA, we'll also look at China and decide, well, is this going to continue? Is it going to be for all of 2020, which I believe it will? And if that's the case, then it becomes a very tough scenario to decide what to do in the future for your business. So I'm hoping that Trump and Xi will come to an agreement, but I don't expect anything even into 2020.
Just ahead, we will get some predictions. What can we expect in 2020? Andrew Bush, Michael Palumbo, and Susan Schmidt joining us on this very special economic roundtable live from the downtown offices of Plant Moran. That is just ahead.
From Plant Moran's downtown Chicago office, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
I'm Cisco Cotto. Great to have you with us on this special edition of the Noon Business Hour at Plant Moran. Andrew Bush is joining us, Michael Palumbo and Susan Schmidt. All right, it's time to look ahead to 2020. We'll just go down the row here, beginning with Susan. What do you expect to happen? Any sort of prediction economically? I mean, what are you looking forward to?
So 2020 is super tough because we've got an election year. And this is where it's hard to say the markets are going to do this or do that because you got exogenous events. These sound bites are going to cross over and disrupt the market, and it can go in any which direction. We've got a lot of areas that are going to be vulnerable. So think about healthcare, think about infrastructure spend, think about defense, any topic that can come up in the election, that has a chance to be vulnerable in those stocks in the market. So I think we've got a lot of volatility. At the same time, we've got a pretty good, okay base. We're talking about things slowing, but still very high on the employment overall, average hourly earnings going up, no sign of inflation. The underlying economy maintains a stability that I think will continue through 2020. And so it's just trying to balance that out, ride out the storm. There are going to be a lot of tweets and a lot of commentary that are going to cause some disruption. You just have to look through it.
Andy Bush, what do you think, 2020?
So no recession, but slow growth, number one. Number two, we will get both USMCA and a partial Chinese deal. And number three, as far as the election goes, I've written a lot of research on the Democrat candidates and the president. And I will tell you that the markets are not pricing in the risk of a Democrat candidate, because if you read the research, you will know that this is possibly one of the biggest shifts in policy into the private sector that we'll ever see in our lifetime. So I think if a Democrat is winning in the election, especially as we're heading into the summer after their convention and into the fall, I think the markets start to price that risk in and start to really take a breather on any rally.
Now, I'm hearing a lot of analysts. It depends on the Democrat, right? If it's sort of more the middle of the road.
First of all, let me correct you. There is no middle of the road Democrat. They're all much further to the left. Bernie Sanders was the middle of those candidates for a long time until Biden came in. I mean, humbly stated, read my research. You'll see these are 10-page papers. They're quite detailed and they're objective, but it is extraordinary, the risk. Just as an example, all of them want to ban fracking on day one. So that's what we're talking about.
So can I get that research at andrewbush.com?
Oddly enough, you can.
Well,
yes.
That's so surprising. Wow. Michael Palumbo, 2020.
I think bond yields will remain range-bound, so that means that if you can take that as a given, I would say S&P earnings would be 170 to 175, and that would put a forward PE at 17. That, to me, is still cheap. There's room to run on the upside, and I do think the pain trade is still up, and that's the biggest thing that I think will drive a slight market rally into next year. But as these folks have said, the big thing hanging over it is the election, and the election will be a headwind for sure, and especially if some of these radical Democrats get in there, or there's a fear that they will, and people start realizing some of their policies, that will cause possibly a little bit of a downturn. But I think overall the markets will have a slight up move, and better if Trump or Biden wins than if we get someone else.
So much better than living in boring times, isn't it? Really.
Indeed.
Come on.
Well, and just to be clear. But as far as like the election goes, you can think whatever policies you want.
Right.
Like if you want those policies, that's great. Short term, they're going to be very disruptive. That's kind of my point.
And we're here to talk about markets. So we're not saying they're right or wrong.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
Exactly.
We're here to talk about what's going to happen to the stock market.
Very much so.
And it's how do you invest?
Yeah. Right.
Always
exactly.
Appreciate analysis from you three. Andrew Bush, Susan Schmidt, Michael Palumbo, thanks for being with us. Love always being at Plant Moran, these wonderful downtown offices right along the river. Thank you, Plant Moran, for being such great hosts every time we are here.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.